Welcome to Far West Texas. Greetings from the Big Bend Sentinel, Alpine Avalanche, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer newspapers. Read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas.
Obituaries in the Monahans News, January 16, 2020. Tomasa Armendariz, 89, of Monahans, passed away on January 10 in Odessa. Armendariz was born in Cuchillo Parado, Mexico, to Julio Flores Padilla and Nemesia Lavario on December 21, 1930. Tomasa is preceded in death by her husband, José Armendariz, brother Pilar Lavario Flores, two grandchildren, Claudia and Oscar Armendariz, and her mother and father, Nemesia Lavario and Julio Padilla. Tomasa is survived by her sons, Emilio Armendariz and wife Sofia, Lupe Armendariz and wife Lydia, Roberto Armendariz and wife Alicia, Primitivo Armendariz, Saul Armendariz and wife Olga, Armando Armendariz and wife Loreno, and her brother Jevo Flores. She is also survived by 31 grandchildren, 51 great-grandchildren, and 3 great-great-grandchildren. Viewing was Monday, January 13, and Tuesday, January 14. Rosary was held at Harkey Funeral Home on Tuesday, January 14 at 7 p.m. Mass was held at St. John's Catholic Church on January 15 at 12 p.m. Burial followed at Monahans Memorial Cemetery. Kevin Dwayne Corsi of Odessa passed away on January 8, 2020 in Odessa. He is survived by his two sons, Taylor Corsi, Wesley Corsi, loving companion, Teresa Johnson, sister, Kelly Corsi, parents, Harold and Linda Corsi, and a host of family and friends. A private memorial service has been planned for the family and close friends. Visit our website, harkeyfunerals.com, to sign the guest book or leave a personal note for the family. Council appoints Gregory as new airport FBO manager, by Christy Sullivan. Meeting for the first time in 2020, City Council members accepted the termination of contract of the current Roy Hurd Memorial Airport fixed base operator, FBO manager Gary Wilhelm, and agreed to appoint Brett Gregory as the new airport FBO manager. A fixed base operator, FBO, is an organization or person granted the right by an airport to operate at the airport and provide aeronautical services such as fueling, hangaring, tie-down and parking, aircraft rental, aircraft maintenance, flight instruction, and similar services. Wilhelm had served as the FBO manager since May of 2017 and submitted his resignation to the city manager on January 2nd. Floyd accused of brandishing firearm at driver, by Christy Sullivan. Ashlyn Marie Floyd, 21, of 4306 South Veronica, was arrested and booked into Ward County Jail on Saturday, January 11, on a charge of deadly conduct, a Class A misdemeanor. According to Monahans Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana, on January 8, officers were dispatched to the 500 block of East A Street in reference to a call from Victor Robles, who stated he was traveling east on Sealy Street and was cut off by a female driver who brandished a firearm toward him. Robles gave Officer Ricky Allen a description of the vehicle and driver. Based off the description Robles gave, Officer Allen knew the female that Robles was referring to, so contact was made with her via telephone. Floyd admitted to displaying the weapon, he added. A warrant was issued for Floyd, and she subsequently turned herself in and was taken to the Ward County Jail. Bond was set at $3,000. Floyd posed the bond and was released on January 11. If convicted, Floyd could face up to 1 year in jail, a fine of up to $4,000, or both. Hello, this is Sonia reading the Monahans News for Thursday, January 16, 2020. Moreno facing aggravated sexual assault charge, by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man was arrested on a charge of aggravated sexual assault of a child after allegedly having an ongoing sexual relationship with a 15-year-old girl. Dimitri Anthony Moreno, 21, of 503 West 6th Street, was arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail on January 9 on an arrest warrant charging him with aggravated sexual assault. On December 30th, the victim's mother, Destiny Johnson, spoke to Officer Ortiz at the police station regarding phone harassment. Monahans Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana said, While conducting interviews and during the course of the investigation, officers learned that the 15-year-old victim and Moreno had been having a relationship sexual in nature, he said. Officers were able to obtain a warrant for Moreno on January 7th, and he was subsequently arrested. The reason for the aggravated sexual assault of a child charge is due to Moreno and the victim actually having sexual intercourse, penetration, he said. Unlike an aggravated sexual assault against an adult, there is no prerequisite of violence or force for aggravated sexual assault of a child. Bond was set at $30,000, and Moreno posted bond on January 9 and was released. If convicted, Moreno could face between 2 and 20 years imprisonment and or a fine of up to $10,000.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading The Alpine Avalanche for Thursday, January 9th, 2020. Council Eyes City Hall Expansion by Roxanne Hill. At its regular meeting January 7th, Alpine City Manager Eric Zimmer introduced to the council the idea of expanding City Hall. Zimmer said there was limited space in the current building for the various city departments and suggested adding 3,000 square feet to the existing facility to house all of administration, utilities, and billing, records, finance, public works, and human resources in one place. Zimmer said it would benefit residents to have one stop to take care of all their city business. Councilmember Ward 5, Rick Stevens, asked Zimmer about a time frame and funding for a possible expansion, and Zimmer replied that he would work with Public Works Director Eddie Molinar on design and costs. He added that by March or April he would have a better idea of the cost and funding. Councilmember Ward 4 Lucy Escovedo asked if the old Sunshine House building on Sol Ross Avenue might be one of the properties sold. Zimmer noted that the vacant building was considered historical, adding, "You wouldn't want to sell it to somebody who is going to chop it up and do something horrific to it. I think that's part of what we will determine from a community perspective, what makes the most sense." He mentioned the plethora of vacant buildings around the city and said he and building official David Hale were discussing how to address that issue. In other news, Zimmer presented an overview of the interlocal agreements between the city and Brewster County. He and Finance Director Megan Antrim recently met with County Judge Eleazar Cano, along with Brewster County Emergency Management Coordinator Stephanie Elmore, to discuss issues interrelated between the city and the county, including combining the city and county emergency dispatch centers for more efficiency. Finance Director Megan Antrim and Zimmer had been discussing city investments, and Zimmer said one of his goals for 2020 was to revisit the city's investment policy and look at reserve amounts to make wise investments. He had also talked with residents with finance backgrounds who might be interested in serving on an investments committee. Chief of Police Robert Martin presented his department report and said he was evaluating the department's needs, including upgrading handheld radios and adding tasers and body cameras. Martin said that during recent execution of a search warrant, 33 grams of methamphetamine were seized and that it was a significant drug bust for the city. He praised the law enforcement officers for a job well done. The next regular City Council meeting is set for Tuesday, January 21st at 5:30 p.m. in Council Chambers. Four Corners Exhibit to Open at Museum by Gail Diane Jovanovich. The beauty and wonder of the Big Bend will be featured in an exhibit coming to Alpine next week, with an opening reception at Museum of the Big Bend Friday, January 17th, from 5 to 7 p.m., the show will run through March 22nd. In this exhibit, the plein air painters of the Four Corners interpret West Texas nature directly and intimately with all its variety of colors, shapes, and patterns. En plein air is a French expression that means in the open air. It's used by artists to describe the art of outdoor painting, capturing landscapes and views in natural light. Plein air techniques apply to all painting mediums. Steve Unger of Aztec, New Mexico, curated the exhibit, and paintings include works from 9 artists, mainly from Colorado and New Mexico. More than 40 artists belong to the group, with members in Utah and Arizona as well. "We're a professional group," said Unger. "Most of the artists are professionals, and many also belong to other plein air groups." And paint they do. The Four Corners group features 3 juried shows during the year, and sometimes 1 or 2 additional shows annually. And they paint bimonthly during excursions to national parks and other scenic spots in the Four Corners region. New members must meet rigorous standards. Membership is by invitation, and potential members must participate in what Unger called paintouts. At one of the group's 2 annual meetings, a nominated artist who has attended 3 paintouts presents his paintings, and the group juries them. They vote on whether you can become a member or not. It makes it pretty exclusive, and the quality is high, said Unger. Members are represented in galleries across the nation, as well as exhibiting in many national and regional juried shows, including an exhibit at Museum of the Big Bend in 2015. I knew former director Liz Jackson when she was at the museum. Mary Bones was working as curator at the time, and we set up a schedule, said Unger. We prepared for 5 years for our first show at the museum, and this one was about another 5 years. Along with Unger, 6 of the 9 represented artists are expected to attend the opening, but the other 3 are traveling and painting the world. All paintings in the exhibit were rendered on-site in the Big Bend area, but Unger noted that 2 studio pieces would be included in the exhibit. The studio pieces were painted from plein air paintings done in the Big Bend. The studio piece will be shown, and the plein air piece will be right beside it so you can see the process, Unger said. He urged art lovers to visit the exhibit, saying, "Come and enjoy the show. That's what it's for. West Texas is different and dramatic." For more information, call 432-837-8143 or visit museumofthebigbend.com. Obituaries for January 9th. Estela L. Hernandez. Estela L. Hernandez was born to Josefa and Manuel Lara in Alpine, January 10, 1945. She passed away December 30th. She is survived by her son David and wife Denisha, son Dante, and daughter Monica, as well as 3 grandchildren. Funeral service was held Saturday, January 11th at Our Lady of Peace Catholic Church in Alpine. Wanda Louise Thomas. Wanda Louise Thomas, 79, passed away the morning of December 27th in Sherman from complications of surgery. She was born November 12, 1940, in Dallas to Eliza Marie Thomas and James Wesley Thomas. She was the last surviving of 11 children. She is survived by many nieces and nephews. A service will be held in the future at the Parish Family Gravesite in Coppell. Linda Jean Roach Little. Linda Jean Roach Little passed away in her sleep December 14th after a long illness. She was born to J.A. and Nessie May Roach, June 5th, 1943, in Big Lake. She was preceded in death by her sister, Mary Kathleen Roach, her parents, and her husband, Chris Little. She married George E. Grubb, Jr. in 1962, and they were blessed with 2 daughters. She married Christopher T. Little in 1985, and they were married until his death in 2018. Linda is survived by her sister, Karen Gail McGuire, and husband Brad of Alpine, daughter Dr. Tamara L. Grubb and husband Bill of Uniontown, Washington, daughter Lana R. Hickok and husband Ray of Crawford, Stepdaughter Meg Pratt of Marble Falls, stepdaughter Suzanne Hansen of Gillette, Wyoming, 4 grandchildren and 3 step-grandchildren. She will be honored in a private ceremony at a later date. The family asks for memorials to be sent to the Alpine Public Library, the Sunshine House, Michael's Ministry, the Alpine Humane Society, or the charity of your choice. Alpine Memorial Funeral Home was entrusted with her services. Online condolences may be left at alpinememorialfuneralhome.com. Lloyd J. Poissonnat. Lloyd J. Poissonnat passed away January 2nd after a lengthy illness. He was 72. He was born to Major Lloyd and Helen Poissonnat in 1947 in New Orleans, Louisiana. He is survived by his partner and wife of 38 years, Karen Hughes, stepdaughter Monique To, and husband Seng To, and 2 grandchildren. Vivian Elaine Nye Ratcliffe. Vivian Elaine Nye Ratcliffe passed away January 1st. She was born to Van and Millie Nye, September 6, 1951. She was married to the late Jerry Ratcliffe. She was preceded in death by her mother, Millie Nye, and survived by her father, Van Nye, Sr. of McAllister, Oklahoma, her brother, Van Nye, Jr. of Alpine, and sisters Vicki Conwell, Susan Scown, and Pam Johnston, all of Alpine, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. A celebration of life was held January 7th at the First Baptist Church Fellowship Hall in Alpine. Erica Marie Reyes. Erica Marie Reyes, born May 18, 1978, in Alpine, passed away January 1st. Surviving her are her parents, Emma and Merardo Lalo Reyes, as well as aunts and uncles and many cousins. She was preceded in death by her maternal grandparents, Conrado and Zobaida Ariola, paternal grandparents, Merardo and Jesusita Reyes, an uncle, an aunt, and a cousin. A rosary service was held at Our Lady of Peace Catholic Church in Alpine January 7th, and Mass of Christian burial followed. Burial was at Holy Angel Cemetery, with Father Mike Alcuino as celebrant. Alpine Memorial Funeral Home was entrusted with her services. Online condolences may be left at alpinememorialfuneralhome.com. John Jack C. West. Jack C. West of Alpine died Christmas Eve, December 24th. He was born February 14th, 1955, in Carlsbad, New Mexico, to Jesse Christopher West and Barbara Gorham West. Rosary was recited January 2nd at Our Lady of Peace Catholic Church, followed by Mass of Christian burial, with Father Mike of Presidio as celebrant. Burial followed at Elm Grove Cemetery in Alpine. Surviving him are his brother Steve West and wife Renee of Florence, Arizona, several nieces, aunts, and an uncle. He's preceded in death by his parents. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that donations be made to the National Epilepsy Foundation of Landover, Maryland, the American Lung Association of Chicago, Illinois, or to a charity of your choice. The West family entrusted Alpine Memorial Funeral Home with arrangements. Online condolences may be left at alpinememorialfuneralhome.com.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, January 9th, 2020. Front page. New police building almost finished by Aurora Syene, Pioneer Reporter. The city of Fort Stockton is nearing completion on its new police department building, with some staff already making the move from the temporary offices on 3rd Street to the Front Street side. Housed in the former Apache Plaza site, 1710 North Front Street, several connected buildings will house the police department, including meeting rooms, the dispatch center, a training center and storage areas for police cars, and large evidence items. The police department was moved from its location on Main and First Streets into the portable buildings on 3rd Street in 2017. The Apache Plaza site was purchased in 2018. In May 2019, former police chief Ryan Skelton estimated the construction would be done by July, but according to city officials, there was much left to be done, including the extensive work in order to get the dispatch area ready. In order to move the police department and the dispatch, a great deal of technical support is involved, and the state needs advance warning. "It's not an overnight thing," said Police Chief Robert Lujan, who succeeded Skelton as chief of police in October. Currently, the dispatch is in the Main Street location, but should be completely moved to the new site by early 2020, as the dispatch room at the new office will be done by the end of January. Lujan said the department is hoping to have an open house for the public in March, so people may see all the work they have done. The city opted to use its own employees to make the project cheaper, but the move resulted in the project needing more time to finish. The Criminal Investigations Division has been working out of the Front Street office for some time now. The new office is equipped with higher security options so the staff stays safe. Employees have assigned keys that indicate who opened specific doors. Pre-programmed automatic locking doors have also been installed, along with cameras at each door and speaker systems to talk to those outside. "This is a state-of-the-art deal," said Lujan. They also have access to live streams and motion sensors to alert employees when people are near the property. "This is a sophisticated security system," said Assistant Police Chief Ernesto Velasquez. The building is also equipped with a secure 24-hour lobby area should people need to come to the building in person. Currently, the department has 2 dispatch employees, but are looking for others to fill the stressful job. Another part of the building will be home to the training center, which will be finished at a later date. It is in the same spot as the old Apache Theater, and will also be home to the municipal court judge. On the other side of the police department is an area for storage and for vehicles while not in use. "It's a work in progress," said Lujan. "The technology was the hardest part of the move. That takes a long time," said Lujan. Page 2, Pecos County People. A look at people and business in Pecos County. Villarreal finds many ways to serve community. By Aurora Sain, Pioneer Reporter. Luis Villarreal has taken his love of serving the community and extended it across all aspects of his life. Villarreal, 47, is the CEO of Cactus Health Services, Incorporated, a deacon for the Catholic Church Diocese of San Angelo, and a devoted member of the Fort Stockton community since 1994. Villarreal originally grew up in Sanderson and remembers walking to the local church with his grandma. He wasn't sure what he wanted to do in life because he wanted to do everything. "I wanted to be a priest. I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to heal people," said Villarreal. He went to the Sul Ross State University, went through a leadership class during a military boot camp, and finished with his bachelor's degree in science and biology with a minor in chemistry. He thought he wanted to go to medical school or maybe be a biologist. During this time, he met his now wife, Yvette, and came to a realization that shifted his focus. "The road you're going to take is only open to you by the one above," said Villarreal. "He will always lead you back to the road you're supposed to be on." He started teaching intermediate school science and then went on to help start the first alternative high school, the School of Choice, at the Butts Education Center. He also served 8 years on the Fort Stockton City Council, where he said he enjoyed working with the various boards. "We were moving things and helping people in the community," said Villarreal. He realized during that time that he was called to do more, and applied for the deacon program. The passion I had for the community, the love of people and loving and serving our neighbors brought me there, he said. The deacon program takes 5 years, and in 2010 he was ordained. It was all worth it, he said. The program is built on three principles, word, altar, and service, the latter being his favorite. Service to people, that's what I love to do, he said. If you asked what road it took to get me here, it would be a road of service. He also helped with the Pecos County Memorial Hospital Home Hospice Chaplain Program, from initial stage to full certification and hospice accreditation. For 10 years, he was on the board for Cactus Health Services Incorporated before becoming the CEO in 2015. I see the CEO position as a mission to serve as many people in as many communities, said Villarreal. There's a lot of people in need of health care. A principle he instills in the staff is customer service and the importance of giving the customers a laugh, smile, or something to cheer them up. We try to meet all the opportunities for great customer service, he said. Now, Villarreal is waiting to hear where he will serve as deacon. For now, he fills in where he is needed. He hopes to continue and grow his commitment to community with his wife and three kids. I hope I am still here as the clinic continues to grow and help more people, said Villarreal. He also hopes to grow spiritually and continue his mission of serving people and bringing people to Christ. I plan to grow and awaken that part even stronger, he said. He also wants to help be a stronger component in political avenues in Fort Stockton and get more involved. The more people stay out of it, the worse off it is for a lot of people, he said. Those who have the ability to stand up should do it. He hopes that the community will continue to strengthen and not just in the wake of tragedies. Can we walk that same path together again and every day to make this community better, said Villarreal. Hello, this is Kay, reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, January 9th, 2020. Obituaries. Fane Downs. The Reverend Dr. Fane Downs was born on March 26th, 1935, in Lubbock, Texas, and passed away on December 11th, 2019, in Kerrville, Texas. She was the first child of Jack Downs and Margaret Stanton Downs. Her parents, aunts, uncles, and cousins preceded her in death. She is survived by her brother, William J. Downs, Ph.D., of Orange Grove, Texas. The service in witness to the resurrection for Reverend Dr. Fane Downs will be Saturday, January 11th at 1 p.m. in the sanctuary of the First Presbyterian Church of Kerrville, 800 Jefferson Street, reception to follow in Ryan Hall. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to First Presbyterian Church, Kerrville, Austin Presbyterian Theological Seminary, Austin, Moe Ranch, Hunt, and Riverside Nature Center, Kerrville. Condolences may be sent at www.grimesfuneralchapels.com by selecting the Send Condolences link. Sylvia Ann Townsend. Sylvia Ann Townsend of Paris, Texas, passed away Friday, January 3, 2020, in Dallas, Texas. She was born in Fairfield, Illinois, on April 1, 1948, the daughter of Estelle Robert and Wanda Juanita Miller Hearn. Left to cherish her memory is her husband of 53 years, William Townsend of Paris, Texas, their three daughters, Anne Marie and Scott West, Renee Townsend and Wanda Townsend, five grandchildren, one great-grandchild, her sister Dorothy Nolan, A memorial service for Sylvia is scheduled for 3 p.m. Saturday, January 11th, 2020, at Calvary United Methodist Church. Roden Pryor funeral directors are in charge of arrangements. An online guest registry is available at rodenpryor.com. Alejandro V. Hondo Marquez. Alejandro V. Hondo Marquez of Sanderson entered rest on January 2, 2020, at the age of 89. He was born April 10, 1930, in Sanderson, Texas. Survivors include his wife, Gloria, sons, Eliberto Marquez and wife, Teresa, of Dripping Springs, Texas, and David Marquez and wife, Michelle, of El Paso, Texas, daughters, Eulalia Munoz and husband, Carlos, of Austin, Texas, and Yolanda Sanchez and husband, Ray, of Sanderson, Texas. He was preceded in death by his parents, Alejandro Marquez and Petra V. Marquez, brothers Sabas Marquez and Cruz Marquez, and sisters Gudelia Lopez, Anita Rodriguez, Reynalda Hernandez, and Isadora Mancha. Visitation, rosary, and services were held on Monday, January 6, 2020, at St. James Catholic Church, 209 East Hackberry Street in Sanderson, Texas. Burial followed at the Santa Rita Cemetery. Remembrances and condolences may be shared with the family at www.heritagefuneralhomeofthebigbend.com. Guillermo Glenn Espino. Guillermo Glenn Espino, that's E-S-P-I-N-O, came into our lives on May 29, 1974, at approximately 4:15 p.m., and he entered eternal life on December 15, 2019, at approximately 10:40 a.m. He is survived by his loving wife, Lynette, daughter, Kendra, son-in-law, Jonathan Barrera, and one grandson. He also leaves behind his parents, Billy and Yolanda Espino, his older brother, Gabriel Espino, sister-in-law, Roxana Espino, nieces, Carissa and Mia Espino, and nephew, Zeke Espino. He was an amazing son-in-law to Johnny and Rosie Flores. He was a light-hearted and fun brother-in-law to Johnny and Eveline Flores, Annette Martinez, Josh and Amy Gonzalez, and Joshua Flores. He was always young at heart with his 10 nieces and nephews. Glenn's final wishes were for friends and family to spend time with their loved ones at this time of year. Family, friends, and extended family attended a rosary on Sunday, January 5, 2019, at St. Agnes Catholic Church, North Campus. His request for a private family funeral service has been arranged by Father Hatch and Our Lady of Guadalupe staff. Orbra Orb Carol Rowden. Orbra Orb Carol Rowden left this earth to be with his Savior as he was surrounded by his children on Sunday, January 5th, 2020, at the age of 87. He is survived by two brothers, Gene of San Angelo, Texas, and Lee Dale of Winsboro, Texas, three children, Kelly Dale Rowden of Gardendale, Texas, Dana Rowden Nance of Houston, Texas, Mark Damon Rowden and wife Cindy of Forney, Texas, and seven grandchildren, as well as six great-grandchildren and many nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his wife, Joanna Jody Cook Rowden, his father, Johnny Carroll Rowden, and his mother, Azru Rowden. Memorial services will be on Thursday, January 9, 2020, at Anderson Clayton Gonzalez Funeral Home, 1111 Military Parkway, Mesquite, Texas, 75149. Memorial service will be from 11 a.m. to noon. in lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made to the Hydrocephalus Association at www.hydroassoc.org. www.hydroassoc.org.
This article appeared in the Big Bend Sentinel on January 9, 2020. Prosecutors request more time in child sex abuse obscenity case. The story was written by Stephen Paulson. Federal prosecutors say they need more time to build their case against Thomas Arthur, a man in his 60s, who they accused last year of running a text erotica site focused on child sexual abuse from his Terlingua area home. In a motion filed last month in federal court, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of Texas said they plan to take Arthur to trial in June, around 6 months later than the original scheduled court date in January. They say the case against Arthur is, quote, so unusual or so complex that it is unreasonable to expect adequate preparation in time for the original January court date, the motion states. Authorities have seized at least 25 media devices from Arthur, including cell phones, VHS tapes, and flash drives, which prosecutors say will take a considerable amount of time to analyze, according to the filing. The FBI also seized 95 boxes of sexually oriented books that, quote, need to be inventoried, cataloged, and photographed or scanned in a process that will take additional weeks, end quote. And while the charges against Arthur originally focused on allegedly obscene text or artwork, prosecutors say they've now allegedly found actual child pornography on at least one device, according to the motion. The U.S. Attorney's Office did not immediately respond to a request for comment, but Mark Bennett, a Houston-based criminal defense lawyer representing Arthur, said it was, quote, not uncommon for cases like this to be declared complex and postponed. Quote, we had no objections that would make any difference, he said, of the delay. Quote, I would certainly rather that Mr. Arthur get out sooner rather than later, he added. But on the other hand, his chances of getting out are better if all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed. End quote. Arthur's legal saga began in November when the FBI and local authorities raided his secluded residence in South Brewster County, as the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported. Federal authorities later charged Arthur with three crimes: importation or transportation of obscene matters, engaging in the business of selling or transferring obscene matters, and obscene visual representations of the sexual abuse of children. An affidavit, written by an FBI special agent and attached to the original criminal complaint, offers more context. Starting as early as 2005, the affidavit states, Arthur allegedly owned and operated a website that charged membership fees for, quote, text stories about the sexual abuse of children, end quote. Quote, most of the stories on the site graphically described instances of rape, incest, and adults sexually abusing children, the affidavit stated. Authorities have redacted the name of the website because some of its users are still under investigation. The FBI started investigating the site in September, using a subscriber's account to download at least five stories. During questioning, Arthur allegedly admitted to running the website, but said pornographic drawings of children on the website were art. It remains to be seen whether the Fed's case against Arthur will focus on written texts or on any child pornography later found on Arthur's property. In 2003, Congress tightened restrictions on depictions of child pornography, spanning drawings, cartoons, sculptures, and paintings that depict a minor engaging in sexually explicit conduct. But the Supreme Court struck down a similar law in 2002, and the laws on text-based child pornography are far from settled. In his interview with the Big Bend Sentinel, Bennett said it was very unusual for authorities to bring obscenity charges based on writings. Quote, "It's hard to see how text can be shown to have no artistic value," he said. At a bond hearing later in November, the public learned more about Arthur and the site he allegedly ran. He reportedly earned $10,000 to $14,000 a month from the child sex abuse erotica site, as well as from another website which focused on adult pornography and erotica. Authorities say they found 50 firearms, including antiques, at his residence. They also said Arthur was selling firearms online, along with ammunition he allegedly advertised as armor-piercing. His lawyer, Mark Bennett, argued in court that Arthur should be granted bond, noting that Arthur did not need a license to sell weapons online. He also said that Arthur was not a flight risk and lived on a secluded ranch where he did not come into contact with children. Judge David B. Fannin, who presided over the hearing, declined to offer Arthur bond. He also declined to move Arthur out of solitary confinement, saying the U.S. Marshals Service had placed Arthur in solitary for Arthur's own protection and that he did not want to undermine their decision. Here is an obituary that appeared in the Big Bend Sentinel on January 9th. Paul Weyertz was born July 25, 1929, to Henry and Annie Weyertz of Alpine, Texas. Dr. Paul Weyertz married Beverly Thorne on November 25, 1965. Together, they had one child, Paul Robert Weyertz, Jr. He was preceded in death by his brother, H.H. Weyertz, and son, Paul Robert Weyertz, Jr. He is survived by his wife, Beverly Thorne, children, Albert Applethorne, and wife, Sherry of Sanderson. Lucy Womack Snyder and husband Frank of La Pryor, and daughter-in-law Amy Weyertz. He is also survived by five grandchildren. Graveside service was held on Saturday, December 28th at 3 p.m. at Elm Grove Cemetery with funeral celebrant Joe Greer Denham III as celebrant. Alpine Memorial Funeral Home was entrusted with the service. Online condolences may be made at www.alpinememorialfuneralhome.com.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Monahan's News for Thursday, January 9th, 2020, front page. Swanson sentences Fulfer to 8 years in TDCJ on theft case. Online solicitation of minor charge dismissed. By Christy Sullivan, staff writer. Nathan Mark Fulfer, 29, of 1209 North Doris, was sentenced to 8 years confinement in the Institutional Division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice on a charge of theft, a third-degree felony. The sentence was imposed by 143rd District Court Judge Mike Swanson on January 7th, after Fulfer's community supervision was revoked on December 12th, 2018, when he was arrested for online solicitation of a minor, also a third-degree felony. Fulfer first came under investigation in January 2014, although the date of offense is stated on court documents as April 20, 2012, through December 30, 2013. The investigation by the Ward County Sheriff's Office involved Fulfer and the misappropriation of funds. At the time, Fulfer had thrown his hat in the ring as the GOP candidate for Justice of the Peace 1 and 4. On April 4, 2014, Fulfer was arrested and booked for theft over $20,000, but less than $100,000, following a grand jury indictment issued April 3rd. The indictment stated that Fulfer unlawfully appropriated or otherwise exercised control of funds from Flotest Incorporated with intent to deprive the owner of the property, and the aggregate value the property obtained was $20,000 or more, but less than $100,000. Bond was set at $35,000. According to Michael Strickland, Ward County Sheriff at the time of the arrest, one of the reasons for the term misappropriation of funds stemmed from the methods involved in the alleged theft. As of January 2014, 40 or more checks had been written without the permission of Flotest Incorporated, in a manner meeting the requirements for forgery. In addition, the investigation reviewed credit card use by Fulfer. The other option, apparently taken by the grand jury, was using the total amount taken by this method, which would be theft in total over $20,000. The indictment was for the theft of the accumulated amount. In late April 2014, citing the potential of too many distractions had he continued his campaign, Fulfer withdrew his candidacy for JP of Precincts 1 and 4 after receiving more votes in the GOP primary election in February than his opponent received in the Democratic primary. On June 6, 2014, Fulfer entered a guilty plea and was granted deferred adjudication in 143rd District Court, presided over by then-District Judge Bob Park. In the plea agreement, Fulfer was to serve 8 years deferred adjudication, a fine of $1,500, court costs of $248 plus $50 for Crime Stoppers. He was also required to complete 500 hours of community service. In addition, Fulfer was required to make probation payments and payments toward restitution at approximately $470 per month for the next 8 years. If all conditions were met, Fulfer's record would be cleared. If not successfully met, any sentence up to the maximum would be back on the table. On June 30, 2015, Fulfer was arrested by self-surrender for having failed to meet requirements of his community supervision, probation, including 1. Failure to appear before the 143rd Judicial Court on June 26th for his notice to show cause hearing, 2. Violating Term 12 when he failed to pay his fine, fees, and restitution, totaling $42,334.39, with the unpaid total to be paid in monthly installments of $470, with the defendant currently delinquent by $2,160. 3. Violating Term 13 when he failed to pay his monthly community supervision fee of $60, with defendant being delinquent by $100. 4. Violating Term 14 when he failed to provide a sworn affidavit of inability to pay for any month he did not pay. 5. Violating Term 15 with defendant failing to complete 500 hours of community service at a rate of at least 20 hours per month since initial judgment with 0 hours completed. Fulfer's probation was then revised and reinstated. On December 4, 2018, Fulfer turned himself into the Ward County Sheriff's Office after a warrant was issued for his arrest, charging him with online solicitation of a minor. According to Monahans Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana, the PD received a call on November 29th from a concerned citizen reporting that on October 8th, Fulfer sent a sexually explicit message to a 15-year-old male juvenile through the social media app Snapchat. The police department obtained the messages and from that were able to request a warrant for Fulfer. He turned himself in the next day. Fulfer was then indicted on September 26, 2019, for the online solicitation of a minor charge. According to District Attorney Randy Reynolds, when sentencing Fulfer, the online solicitation of a minor charge was considered, which is also a third-degree felony and carries a sentence of 2 to 10 years, and it was agreed by all parties to dismiss the charges. The state does not intend to pursue the charges any further, Reynolds added. However, his original probation has been revoked, and he was then sentenced to 8 years in TDCJ, a reduction of 2 years off the original sentence of 10 years for accepting responsibility in the matter. He is also ordered to pay $248 in court costs and $28,889.39 in restitution to Flow Test Incorporated of Monahans. He was given 181 days credit toward his sentence for time served. Fulfer was represented by Trent Graham, and the attorney for the state was District Attorney Randall W. Reynolds. Marquez arrested after driving drunk with juveniles in car, by Christy Sullivan, staff writer. Elvis Marquez, 36, of 207 South Katy, was arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail on charges of driving while intoxicated with children under 15 years of age and evading arrest/detention with a vehicle, both state jail felonies. According to Monahans Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana, officers were out patrolling on New Year's Eve and attempted to stop Marquez, who was driving a 2000 Ford Explorer, for failure to maintain single lane in the 1300 block of South Stockton. After initiating lights and sirens, Marquez did not stop. After making several turns off of Stockton, he eventually stopped around the 1400 block of South Doris, where a felony stop was then conducted. He added, "It was determined through the course of the investigation that Marquez was intoxicated and was traveling with 4 juveniles, all under the age of 16. As a result of the investigation, we were able to obtain a warrant signed by Judge Mike Swanson for a blood draw on Marquez to test the alcohol level," Quintana said. Marquez was subsequently arrested on charges of driving while intoxicated with children under 15 years of age and evading arrest, detention with a vehicle. Bond for Marquez was set at $7,500 for both charges, and he was released on January 1st after posting the $15,000 bond. If convicted, Marquez could face 180 days up to 2 years in prison and or a fine up to $10,000. Mims booked for intoxication assault by Christy Sullivan, staff writer. Mickey Jamalavan Mims, 32, of 511 West 4th Street, was arrested and booked into Ward County Jail on Friday, January 3rd, for intoxication assault with vehicle, causing serious bodily injury, a third-degree felony. As previously reported in the news, on November 30th, Monahans Police Department officers and Ward County EMS responded to a two-vehicle crash around 8:17 p.m. on the corner of South Franklin and Seeley Streets. According to MPD Captain Christopher Quintana, Mims was driving a white 2003 Cadillac DeVille southbound on Franklin Street, and while attempting to cross Seeley Street, he disregarded the stop sign and struck Elias Chavez of White Settlement, Texas, who was driving an older model Toyota truck eastbound on Seeley. The force of the crash pushed Mims' car into the building on the corner of 100 block of South Franklin Street. Through the course of the investigation, it was determined Mims was intoxicated at the time of the crash, and a warrant was obtained to collect blood from Mims at Ward Memorial Hospital, where he had been transported to be treated for minor injuries, Quintana added. An arrest warrant was subsequently obtained for Mims and he was arrested. The accident was investigated by Sergeant Xavier Ramon. If convicted, Mims could face 2 to 10 years in prison and or a fine of up to $10,000. Hello, this is Kay reading the Monahans News for January 9th, 2020. Obituaries. John Luther Swanson. John Luther Swanson passed from this life on January 6th, 2020, in Lubbock, Texas, at the age of 93. He was born on the farm on June 10, 1926, in Spade, Lamb County, Texas. He was preceded in death by his parents, Luther and Edna Swanson, his wife, Juanita Swanson, and his brothers, Ernest and Fred Swanson. He is survived by his wife, Yolanda Swanson, 3 children, Deborah, Roland, Mike, Georgiana, and Amy Lance, his 14 grandchildren. There are 19 great-grandchildren and 4 great-great-grandchildren. A graveside service will be held Friday, January 10th at 2 p.m. at the Littlefield Cemetery in Littlefield, Texas. Arrangements are made through Hammond's Funeral Home in Littlefield. Please join us for a memorial service celebrating John's life on Saturday, January 11th at 10 a.m. at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints at IH-20 and South Eric Avenue in Monahans. Bertram Oliver Wood, Jr. Bertram Oliver Wood, Jr., known affectionately as Ollie, died December 6, 2019, at the age of 99 years. Cause of death is listed as kidney failure. Oliver was born in Abbeville, Louisiana, on 6th July 1920, to Elizabeth Nettles Wood and Bertram Oliver Wood, Sr. Mary Louise Wood and Bertram Oliver Wood, Jr. were married in 1942 in San Antonio, Texas, in the Harlandale Presbyterian Church. The ceremony was officiated by Oliver's older brother, Reverend Eugene E. Wood. On 7 July 2019, they celebrated 77 years of marriage. In Monahans, Texas, they raised 3 boys, all of whom graduated from Monahans High in 1957, 1964, and 1970, respectively. Oliver initially worked for Charlie Ice, and later in 1959, he, Joe McShane, and Bill Toms formed a partnership called Wood, McShane, and Toms. Helman Hugh Creel. Helman Hugh Creel, 82, of Kingsland, Texas, passed away January 4, 2020. Hal was born to Alec and Frances Heron Creel on August 15, 1937, in Antlers, Oklahoma. He is survived by his loving wife of 39 years, Faye Creel of Kingsland, Texas, daughters Lori Hawthorne and husband Johnny of Marble Falls, Texas, and Amy Alice of San Antonio, Texas, grandchildren Simon Porter and wife Paige of Seminole, Texas, and J.C. Hawthorne of Marble Falls, Texas, 5 great-grandchildren and brother Ray Creel. Numerous nieces, nephews, extended family, and friends also survive. He is preceded in death by his parents and 7 of his brothers and sisters. A memorial service will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday, January 10th, at the Highland Lakes United Methodist Church in Buchanan Dam, Texas, with Reverend Grady Rowe and Reverend Derek Wellett officiating. Online guest register may be signed at www.putnamcares.com. The family requests memorial donations be made in Hal's name to the Highland Lakes United Methodist Church, P.O. Box 1005, Buchanan Dam, Texas 78609, or the American Kidney Fund at www.kidneyfund.org. Hal's care, entrusted to Putnam Funeral Home and Crematory, 145 Texas Avenue, Kingsland, Texas, 78639. 325-388-0008.